You're listening to Food for Faith. I'm Father John O'Connor, and today's reflection is on a life that we all share, a life in recovery. On first glance, today's scriptures sound a bit bleak. Just listen to the list of words and terms in the first reading in the Gospel. So there's reference to the wicked, it continues, sin, law-breaking, death, more wickedness, renouncing integrity, more sin, practicing filth, broken faith, more sin, more renouncing integrity, more evil, death, guilt, the depths, more guilt, anger against others, calling people fools and renegades, hellfire, and being thrown into prison. It's quite a list. But now let's focus on the real meaning of these scriptures. It's not a beat up on how bad we are, but rather a call to live fully. And it's also giving us a method to help us to live this abundant daily life. A few years ago, I'd been asked to help in preparing a year 13 class for the Sacrament of Reconciliation. So I'd been asked to talk about sin, reconciliation, forgiveness. And I began the class by asking the group, how many of you call yourselves or think that you are sinners? The class was probably 20 plus students, but fewer than 5 raised their hands. So I thought, well, they're ready for this class. And for the next half hour or so, I explained how and why I would raise my own hand, calling myself a sinner. And without going into the gory details of my own sin, I explained why I was calling myself a sinner, sharing my own experience of realizing that I was not living very often as fully as God had created me to live, acknowledging my sin and realizing that I was powerless to save myself, and then calling out to God at times to save me. Well, I thought I'd done a pretty good job of communicating this to these young people in a fairly positive, humorous even, and convincing, I thought, way. And after the half hour, towards the end of the class, I again asked the group, so how many of you call yourselves or consider yourselves to be sinners? Well, this time only a couple more hands were raised, maybe half a dozen out of the total class. So I then, just in the final moments of the class, concluded the session by explaining that in fact, we are all sinners, and that we're really much worse sinners than we think we are, because in each of us there's a deeper sinfulness, which is often subconscious, from which our specific sins arise. But then I went on to say that this is a problem for us, but it's no problem at all for God when we acknowledge this sin, because our acknowledged sin becomes our capacity for God, who is delighted always at the opportunity to do what he does best, and that is to rescue us, to save us. Well, as the last of the students left the room, I recall the teacher walking up to me. She didn't look very happy, and as she began to speak, I realized that she was angry, and she was angry with me, explaining that she and all the other staff do all that they can to build up the self-esteem of the students, but that I had come in and by telling these young people that they were sinners, I was undoing all their good work. Well, I remember as I drove away, I thought a lot about that class and that encounter and what the teacher had said. And I realize now that I've grown to understand that the self-esteem that the teacher thought I was destroying in these students is not a human achievement. Self-esteem is not a human achievement. Instead, positive self-esteem is what we have when we accept that we are imperfect and we know in that imperfection that we are still loved by someone, for example. It's fine to be loved when we achieve well, and it's fine, of course, to be affirmed for our accomplishments, but the positive feeling that we may have in those moments when others are praising us for what we have done quickly passes, because very often the negative thinking creeps in and we might say, well, they love me, but that's because I did what I did well. But if they really knew what I was like, then they probably wouldn't love me. I now like to think of myself as being a person in recovery. This is what I mean. When I am thinking that the abundance of life that I seek is the fruit of my own hard work, my commitment, and even my faith, life becomes hard work. When I think like this, my life becomes a project of self-improvement, motivated by very well-intentioned goals that require my commitment, my faith, and my hard work. It's like my life becomes my project. However, when I live like this at a deeper level, I pretty soon become exhausted, and I begin to suspect that even the best of my goals are powerless to deliver the happiness that they promise. And this suspicion grows to become a conviction, and then I'm left wondering, what's the point of it all? This is why I say that I like to think of myself as someone who is in recovery, because I am in process of daily acknowledging my need, my weakness, my powerlessness, because I know that when I acknowledge that powerlessness, this is the moment when the point of love becomes visible to me, and I'd say almost begin to vibrate with the urgency of the mission that I'm created for. That is to seek salvation not in my own successes and achievements, but to look to the Savior, to Jesus Christ, as the one and the only one who has the power to save me. This realization is precisely what it means to live in right relationship with God and with self. Note that this awareness is ours not when we manage to keep all the rules and achieve all our goals, but when we are brought to our knees by the events of life, by the rough and tumble of life, and we turn to Jesus not just for a hand with a problem that we've got, but we turn to Jesus desperately seeking the salvation that is his mission. Jesus is Savior. Our problem is that when we are brought to our knees, we feel as though we're falling apart, and we and everyone else around us tries to put ourselves back together according to our own idea of who we and others want us to be. The truly humble person is the one who acknowledges powerlessness over at least some aspect of life and who is desperate for healing and growth. Remember that Lent means springtime, and spring is a season of abundant growth. Think of the great images from the natural world, the seed that has to break to germinate, the egg that has to crack for the chicken to hatch, the chrysalis that dissolves that the butterfly might emerge, and the smallest of all seeds falling to the ground and dying and becoming the greatest tree of all. The method that Jesus gives us is not a private project of powerlessness, but involves us then, once we realize our powerless, taking steps to, for example, make amends where necessary, taking at least a step towards putting things right with others, sorting things out. Such action to bring renewed relationship with our sisters and brothers is the visible fruit of personal powerlessness and humility, and it's a sign that salvation has come to our house.